Students and teachers running for their lives after two young men opened fire inside a Colorado high school.
A gunman appeared at the front of one of the theaters. He threw some type of canister, which started releasing some kind of gas, and then he opened fire. At least 50 people were hit. 14 of them, we have now confirmed, were killed.
Connecticut State Police have responded to reports of a shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School. It is in the Newtown School District in the southwestern part of Connecticut.
The first 911 call came in around 7:15 this morning at a residence hall called West Ambler Johnston. And at least two people were shot there, one fatality and one wounded. That's the latest information we have.
Reports of an active shooter at the Naval Reserve Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
The Social Services Center in San Bernardino, California, was the target of up to three terrorists, between one and three armed gunmen armed with assault rifles clad in body armor, who left dozens injured or dead in their wake before fleeing the scene in an SUV.
This is a tragedy that no community should have to experience. It is senseless, and it is unfathomable that somebody in today's society would walk into a church when people are having a prayer meeting and take their lives.
We're going to report of an active shooter.
It's 8:01. I'm Rob Stadler, along with Cheryl White, and this is the News Radio 106.7 Active Shooter Roundtable. These are frightening times, and many of us are wondering what we would do, what should we do, if we are ever caught in an active shooter situation.
And the decisions you make could mean the difference between living and dying. And we've assembled a panel of experts to take your questions. Call us now. Our number is 844-404-1067. With us this morning, Training Coordinator, FBI Special Agent Andrew Van Epps.
And we have Sergeant Dave Collins with the Marietta Police and Jonathan Crandall, Head of Training at Stoddard's Gun Range.
And again, the number to call is 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067. So I think we should just get right to it, Rob. And what should we do, guys? I'm going to ask you individually, but what should we do if we are in an active shooter situation? Is there something that we should do if we're in the room with the shooter, or something we should not do in particular? Let's start with FBI Special Agent Andrew Van Epps. What should we do, first of all?
Well, I think there are three things that everyone should keep in mind if they ever find themselves in an active shooter incident, and that is run, hide, and fight. Those are the three choices you really have, and depending on where the active shooter is in your area, that will really help you determine what are those three choices you pick.
So, Sergeant Collins, say you're not in the room with the shooter, but you think you hear gunfire. You're not sure. You hear something, and it sounds like it could be. Do you run toward it to check it out? What should you do?
Well, we kind of like to start the idea with don't deny that something is going on. That's kind of a big problem, is that people will hear something, they aren't sure exactly what it is. They don't know exactly what to do, so they sit and do nothing, and that creates a problem, because now you're just stationary. You're not going anywhere. You're not doing anything. You get in this denial mode. So we kind of like go out and take a look and see what's going on. Does that put you in a little bit of danger? Perhaps, but it's better to get an idea of what's going on so that you can plan what happens next, as opposed to sitting still and doing nothing and letting the events transpire around you.
The number again to call, 844-404-1067. Welcome to our active shooter roundtable here on News Radio 106.7. Now, there are some people who say, you know what, there's more of us than there is of them in an active shooter situation. Overwhelm him. What's the advice on that?
So, I mean, whatever you choose to do, you do need to commit to your actions. So we've always said that having a plan ahead of time beats figuring it out on your own when an event does occur. We understand that a percent chance of you finding yourself in an active shooter event is very slim, but that doesn't really do anything to avail anyone's feelings about it or make anyone feel better. So having a plan ahead of time and deciding with those three options, run, hide, fight, whichever one of those three that I pick, and I may pick one and then have to go into another at some point, but whichever one I pick, commit to it and go along with the plan that you've already come up with ahead of time, which is what we really advocate.
Now, say you're in an office situation, like we are right now. Do you need to have an office action plan? Do you think that's a good idea?
Absolutely. I think that it's important to have, whether you're an office, a school, a university, a hospital, a house of worship, it's important to have an emergency action plan regarding not only active shooter, but all threats. But obviously, in this day and age, you know, we're very concerned about the active shooter incident.
Sergeant Collins, what are some of the things that that action plan should include? I'm guessing exits.
Exits. Since we're there, let's talk about that. You know, it's interesting. When you came into this building today, how did you come in?
On the elevator.
On the elevator. And when you leave today, how are you going to leave?
On the elevator.
And you do that every single day because we as human beings are creatures of habit. So one of the things we ask people to look for is be situationally aware. Speaking of exits, we get in this habit, we're going to come in and out and do the same thing the same way every single time because that's what we do. But as you go in someplace, start looking around and looking for alternate ways to leave an area. Alternate plans of exits, up to and including if I have to break a window to get out, if that's what I have to do, then that's what I'm going to do. So that's a good place to start with respect to these plans that we have is how I'm going to leave. And don't get pigeonholed or don't think that the way I came in is the only way I can leave.
And you're listening to an active shooter roundtable here on News Radio 106.7. Don't forget, call in now with your questions, 844-404-1067. It's 808 at News Radio 106.7. Rob Stadler along with Cheryl White. And we're in the midst of the hour-long active shooter roundtable here on News Radio 106.7.
And we invite your calls. The number is 844-404-1067. I'm sure you've been thinking about it. There have been so many of these shootings. It's something you don't want to think about, but something we should. The number is 844-404-1067. We have a caller on the line right now. What is your question?
My question is, what should my child do if he's in that situation and I'm not there?
Okay, great question. Let's start with you, FBI Special Agent Andrew Van Epps. What should we tell our children?
I think we need to have a frank conversation with our children about run, hide, fight also. I mean, clearly at school, teachers have responsibility for ensuring the safety of those children, but we need to have that conversation so they're prepared for this like they are for any other event, whether it's a fire, a tornado. This is another threat to them, and we need to have that conversation to prepare them.
What specifically, Sergeant Collins, should we tell them?
Well, we need to kind of talk about what this is, what is an active shooter in such a way that it doesn't frighten the children. It is, by its very nature, when we say active shooter and we picture the images in our mind of what that entails, we need to find a way to go ahead and explain that to our children in such a way that they understand it and that they're not afraid of it, and it empowers them. And then to work with the schools, because the schools in particular all have an active shooter response plan. And one of the things we need to tell our children is when these events occur, should it occur, follow the directions of your teacher. They know what they're doing. They have trained on this. They've practiced this. They have these plans, and you need to follow their direction and do exactly what they tell you to do.
Michelle from Cumming, you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what are your thoughts on this? Have you thought about having a discussion with your child?
I have, and I've even talked about it if we were in the store. He's simply terrified because his cousin lives in Connecticut, and she was about a half hour away from where the whole school shooting
was. The Sandy Hook, yeah.
Yeah, so he's terrified, and I talked to him, and I said, if the shooter is near you and you hear the gunshots in the room, drop to the ground and play possum, because I don't know what else to tell him, because he's that scared. I think he would just stand in that one place, and if he can't move, drop to the ground and act like you're dead. I don't know what else to do.
Hang with us, Michelle. Gentlemen, what do you think?
Well, I think one of the things that can help all of us, whether it's talking with your families or our fellow coworkers, schools, hospitals, is that if you go to the FBI website or go to Google and you type FBI active shooter, our active shooter webpage will pop up. On it, there is a video that has run, hide, fight. And it's about a 5-minute video that you can watch with your family, watch it with your coworkers, and use that to help prepare for an active shooter incident.
Now, Jonathan Crandall, you're head of training for Stoddard's Gun Range. Is that something you discuss when you have the seminars there about the family situation? adults as well as children?
Yeah, so our concept of having a plan includes talking with your children. They can't be prepared for something if they don't understand what is going to happen during such an event or what could happen during such an event, and then what they need to do. So you should empower your kids to have a role to play in the scenario. So whether it's running, it's hiding, or if the worst case scenario, it comes to actually fighting, they know they have three options. Department of Homeland Security, FBI, both have decided that it's simple, having three potential options to choose from. It can be called different things in different jurisdictions and whatnot, but having those three options, and then if they can't do one of the three, they go back to one of the other three. And that would really empower your child that I'm not going to stand in one spot and sit there. I'm going to be empowered with action, and I'm going to do one of the three, and I'm going to commit to it.
8:12 on News Radio 106.7, Rob Stadler along with Cheryl White, and we will return with more on our Active Shooter Roundtable here on 106.7. Again, the number to call with your questions, 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067. 1067. We'll be back on News Radio. It's 8:16 at News Radio 106.7. Rob Stadler and Cheryl White.
And we have a caller on the line. I believe that's James. James, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I am a concealed carry permit holder. If I'm ever in an active shooter situation and I engage the shooter and actually, hit the shooter, what are the next steps? What do I do to keep myself from getting shot from the police? Or other citizens that may be in the same situation as myself?
That is an excellent question, and certainly one that we discuss in our seminars at the Marietta Police Department. You know, what do you do? You find yourself in a situation where you have to engage a shooter. How do you safeguard yourself? The first thing you need to understand is that no one knows who you are when law enforcement is responding, and oftentimes, when we are responding, all we get is there's an active shooter, and we get vague descriptions, or we get multiple descriptions. So in the situation that you've just described, the first thing you need to do is first evaluate, is there still an active threat that you feel like you need to do something about? And if there isn't, then I need to make my weapon safe, and I need to have my hands where officers can see them. So when officers do respond, it's the guy with the badge and the uniform that's going to call the shots. And if we don't know who you are and we can't determine that you're a good guy or you're a bad guy, then unfortunate things may happen. So it is follow the directions of the officers, make yourself to be not a threat, hands where we can see them, and if you've got a phone, I'd be calling on the phone to 911 dispatchers, hey, this is who I am, this is what I just did, this is what I'm wearing, and that information hopefully will make it out to the officers.
James, quick question. Obviously, you've gone through quite a bit of training if you have a carry permit, right?
Yes.
Can you tell us about that, and did the training cover any of the things we're talking about with an active shooter?
Actually, no, my training did not. It did talk about, just making sure that law enforcement, if you are in a situation where you have to use your firearm against, for whatever reason, to make sure that law enforcement knows who you are. But I'm thinking about in a panic situation when there's, people running everywhere and no one really knows what's going on, that wasn't really covered.
Okay. Let's give out the phone number again as we continue the Active Shooter Roundtable here, News Radio 106.7. You want to call 404.
It's 844.
844, thank you. 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067.
You bring up a good point, Rob, about training, and if you're going to have a gun, if you're going to be carrying a gun, training is so important. It's critical to know because you will get training, Jonathan, on when it's appropriate to use the gun, correct? If you go to the seminars that are being held?
So in terms of when an armed response is a correct response, that's somewhat of a personal decision. All we can do as a trainer is when you decide to go with that route is give you the skill and the technique to do so in the most safest manner. Things can be very chaotic in an active shooter event. There's going to be a lot of innocent people that are going to be moving around in your potential line of fire. It does take significant amount of training to be able to pull that off in a controlled and somewhat safe manner. Anytime firearms are involved, of course, our propensity for danger goes up. Law enforcement receives a lot of training in general just to go onto the street in terms of patrol. And then to specifically deal with an active shooter event, they achieve even more training. So as a civilian, we're not required necessarily to obtain such training to carry a firearm, but it's really recommended. And it's your duty that as a citizen, if you're going to employ that as your means of self-defense and think you're going to respond to an active shooter, it's your duty to get that training so you can do so safely.
820 at News Radio 106.7, you're listening to an active shooter roundtable here for the next about 40 minutes or so. And we are taking your calls at 404, make that 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067. Okay, let's go to Joe in Alpharetta. You have a question for our panel of experts.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Is this more kind of fantasy? And the chances of someone being in a situation where they need to shoot somebody else, active shooter situation, it's pretty, it's getting up there with the lottery as far as, whether or not the average person is going to encounter that situation. And I just wonder if this is more kind of just a fantasy discussion. And I worry that it might encourage people listening might think, wow, I'm going to need to do this tomorrow. They may run out and get a gun. And, I like it when the people who really know what they're doing and are experienced and mature have guns. But I don't want to encourage people. I don't want people to get a false sense that they're going to. What are the chances of an average person being in a active shooter situation?
Well, between 2000 and 2013 in the United States, we've actually had 160 active shooter events. And unfortunately, during that time period of 2000 to 2013, the trend line is increasing for the number of active shooter incidents that occur in any given year.
116, and I don't know how many millions and millions of Americans there are. So, you're probably a lot better off leaving. The point is, you're probably a lot better off leaving the gun at home. 116 out of millions and millions of people all day, every day.
Well, we're not advocating that a gun is the right answer to the question by any stretch of the imagination. There are a lot of different ways to pursue this. Let me ask you a question. Are you wearing a seatbelt today? And I'm not asking because I'm going to chase you down as a police officer and write you a ticket for it. But, are you wearing a seatbelt?
No, actually, it's funny you asked. No, I'm on my way to work. I didn't put it on yet. No.
Okay. Well, we got the GPS coordinates. Somebody will stop you shortly. No, I'm just kidding. No, and I asked that question because, you get in your car and you put your seatbelt on every single day. And why do you do that? Because you may get involved in an accident. And that accident may be serious. Right. And the seatbelt may prevent you from injury or may prevent somebody else from injury. And that's really what we're talking about. We're not talking about that this is going to happen, but I can't guarantee that it's not going to happen. And so.
Yeah, that's a great point. The chances of getting a car accident are astronomically higher.
Oh, much so.
And also, seatbelt's not going to hurt anybody. But a gun in the wrong hands or someone who's having a bad day could. I don't want to turn it into a gun debate. I was listening. And it was very interesting and informative. It started making me think, do I need to go get a gun? And, I think you shouldn't get a gun unless you really know what you're doing.
That's a very personal decision as to whether you want to own a firearm or you want to carry a firearm or you're going to use one in this particular situation. But what we want people to do is to be aware that there are other options available to them. You can do something else other than grab your gun and go Rambo on somebody. That's not really the preferred course of action. But there are other things you can do. You can run away from this. You can hide. And at the very last, if your life or somebody else's life is in imminent jeopardy, then fighting. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with a firearm. We just want people to understand that there are options and be empowered by the discussion.
You're listening to an Active Shooter Roundtable at News Radio 106.7. And again, we're taking your calls, 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067 to our panel of experts. We'll be back. It's 825 at News Radio 106.7. 831 at News Radio 106.7. You are listening to Active Shooter Roundtable. We're halfway through. We're another half hour to go here at News Radio 106.7. And again, the phone number to call, 844-404-1067. We're going to get to some of your calls here very shortly.
Want to reintroduce our panel of experts. We have Training Coordinator, FBI Special Agent Andrew Van Epps, Officer Dave Baldwin with Marietta Police, and Dave Collins, and Jonathan Crandall, Head of Training at Stoddard's Gun Range.
And Dave, I got to ask you, we have some sound bites of different sounds of gunfire. And I'm going to ask the stupid question, why is this important when we're talking about an active shooter situation?
Well, understanding what gunfire sounds like in a building is kind of a complex discussion. Different calibers of weapons, different building construction, the way desks are laid out, there are a lot of things that absorb sound and can make gunfire sound different. So really kind of a simple way to describe this and understand, hey, listen, I need to be aware of my surroundings. What does your office normally sound like? What are the things that go on in your office every single day? What does the elevator sound like? What do the phones sound like? What is the gurgling of the water cooler sound like? Every place has its own little background noise, the white noise, if you will, that sounds like it does every single day. The gunfire is something that sounds distinctly different from that. I wish I could tell you that universally that gunfire inside a building sounded like X, but I can't. But I can tell you that if it's not what your office normally sounds like, then it's wrong, and you need to go find out what that is. And that should put the hair on the back of your neck standing up, and you should be thinking, something's not right here, and I need to go see what it is.
Okay, let's play some of the gunfire. You want to introduce the various...
Well, let's play it first, and then...
Yeah, let's play it.
See if, well, yeah, if you know what it is.
I didn't know there was a test today. that's a gunshot.
Yes.
Just what type
it yes, is. It was. .45 caliber, but there you go. 9 millimeter.
Yeah, 9 millimeter, and a lot of it depends upon where it was recorded and in what acoustic surroundings the gunfire was recorded in. I mean, I go back to what I was saying earlier. You know what your office, you know what your place of work sounds like, you know what your school sounds like. If it doesn't sound like that, something's wrong. I mean, I hate to say Sesame Street, but that's kind of what it is. One of these things is not like the others, and I need to go find out what that is. And it's bad until proven otherwise.
And speaking of office, Richie and Marietta, one of our callers, you have a question. You're in an office right now, right?
Yeah. So, I'm on my way to office. Just a quick question. See, you know, kids and office workers also would react to different situation differently. My only question is there any drill or something, you know, which is carried on in schools or offices which explains, you know, kids how to react to the situation?
Well, I think that, again, one of the things is that on the FBI webpage, there is a video, Run, Hide, Fight, that DHS was funded by DHS grant. And I'd encourage that to be shared in businesses, in schools, in houses of worship, churches, to help prepare staffs to prepare for an active shooter incident. I think one of the two ways to think about an active shooter incident, the first is with Run being your first option. Think about it like a fire. How do you get out in a fire? How do you evacuate in a fire? And use those same routes. And again, the easiest, fastest routes out may be through a window. Second, with Hide, think about it like a tornado. We have shelter-in-place locations for tornadoes in Georgia. And in those cases, if it can withstand a tornado, it's probably a good place to withstand an active shooter event.
404, or make that 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067. Let's go to line 3. Gene from Conyers, you have some reaction from the previous phone calls.
I'm a armed security officer. My family business is a private investigation firm, and we do armed security. My question for, the gentleman that called earlier is, if you're scared of having too many people having firearms or having a firearm yourself, for those that are interested in being able to personally protect themselves, do the panel have a recommendation of a firearms course for average people to go to be able to, practice these scenarios and everything?
Well, first, I'd like to just mention that, just in terms of statistics, and we the previous caller mentioned that, that's a really slim chance of the average citizen encountering an active shooter event. And while that is technically true, it also, of those slim chances when there was someone who encountered an active shooter event, there's already been occurrences of people who are armed that were not law enforcement that have already responded to an active shooter event. About 3.8 of those events between 2000 and 2013. So there are people already doing it. And we're not necessarily advocating that people go out and purchase a firearm specifically to address this threat. But if they're already carrying a firearm for their own personal protection and they choose to use that in this event, then they should attend training that gets them more options and more technique for doing that in a high-stress situation. I know at our range, we offer classes and we try to simulate an artificially induced stress. It's not going to be the same because you know you're in a training class, but it really does put you in a different level, and it starts to separate you from someone who has minimal training to someone who has had some training. And then, of course, we encourage even climbing that ladder and adding more and more levels of training as you go on.
News Radio 106.7, you're listening to an Active Shooter Roundtable. Rob Stadler along with Cheryl White. We are taking your calls at 844-404-1067. We're going to get back to some of your calls. You're in the midst of a Active Shooter Roundtable here at News Radio 106.7 at 839.
And I just want to mention that if you would like to listen again to the roundtable, you can visit our website, newsradio1067.com. And while you're there, you will find a list of upcoming free training seminars in what to do in an active shooter situation. We're going to go to the phone. David in Marietta has a question.
David? Hi. Thank you, gentlemen, for all you're doing. I just had a response to a previous caller who actually, I think used the word fantasy discussion about this active shooter situation. And then when was told the number of incidents, kind of minimized that, saying, oh, it's chances of, about the chances of winning the lottery or something like that. But I want to just make a point that for each one of those active shooter situations, there was not just one person involved. There was, I think in the last decade, roughly, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, over 1,000 people wounded or killed in active shooter situations, and those are just the ones that got hit. There's a lot more people who actually are exposed to the danger who come out without being wounded or killed. But I just wanted to make a comment that I think he was minimizing the numbers when actually active shooter situations can involve tens or hundreds or more people, and that's kind of what some of the active shooters are going after, is large numbers of people.
And David, of the numbers that of these situations that have happened, many have been in Atlanta or in the Atlanta area. We had the Conyers, we had downtown Atlanta, we had the school in Chattanooga. So, you know, there have been several that have happened right here. Mm-hmm. So, guys, what do you think about, I want to go back to the office plan real quick. Should we start training team leaders? Do you think that's something that's a good idea?
I think there are a couple components of having a plan, whether it's for an office or any other facility, that are important. And one is taking a look at first how to reduce the risk of an active shooter. And you can reduce the risk of an active shooter. And I think that's an important and often overlooked piece of having a plan. And active shooters go through a pathway to violence. They plan, they prepare, they share, and they act. And so if we can identify them in the phase of plan, prepare, share, then we can prevent an act of violence rather than have to prosecute at the end of the day.
We're taking your calls, 844-404-1067. We're in the midst of an active shooter roundtable here on News Radio 106.7. Let's go to Douglas in Union City. Douglas, thank you for holding. I know it's been some time. What's your question for our panel of experts?
I wanted to know, is it mandatory to, when you purchase a weapon, is it mandatory to have a training class? Does the government make it mandatory for you to have a training class for it? Because I think just not too long ago, right here in Georgia, a lady was shooting at a criminal or whatever, and I think it was in a parking lot or something like that just not too long ago, and I think she got a case for shooting at that individual. And is it mandatory for somebody when they purchase a weapon, basically, is it mandatory that they have training?
Now, the answer to that is no. There's nothing on the books that I'm aware of that requires you to attend a training class. Now, just because it's not required doesn't mean it's a bad idea. In fact, it's a very good idea. You think about when you learn how to drive a car. Now, I learned how to drive a car out in the middle of a field with my dad sitting next to me, smacking me the ruler if I didn't get it right. But you think of the responsibility there is to drive a car. Now, yes, there's mandated training for that, but that's kind of about the same thing. Now you're talking about carrying something that, if used improperly, can cause great bodily harm or death. So you absolutely should be taking a class, and you should be going to your local gun ranges, and you should be looking at the classes that they offer. You should be focusing specifically on firearm safety and the laws as it pertains to carrying and use of a firearm in the state of Georgia. And then when you get comfortable with that, then you start taking more advanced training. But no, there's nothing that requires you to do so, but it is absolutely a very good idea.
Okay, thanks for your call at 844. Our number is 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067. For our active shooter roundtable here on News Radio 106.7, Tony and Swanee and Mike in Powder Springs, hang with us. We're going to get to your calls. First, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back. We are in the midst of an active shooter roundtable here on News Radio.
And we're taking your calls at 844-404-1067. We're going to go to Tony and Swanee right now. What is your question?
Hello. Good morning. My question is, everybody's arming themselves and to protect themselves. And if they do get in one of these active shooter situations and do, respond to it, I think a lot of people are more afraid of what's going to happen to us. You know, are we going to get arrested for shooting somebody, killing somebody? You know, I think that's a question that's on a lot of people's minds.
Well, there certainly could be an investigation involved, no doubt about that, because one of our responsibilities at the end of the active shooter, when all everything is done, is to determine exactly what happened and who played what role. It's not to say that you would be arrested, that you'd even be prosecuted for it, because Georgia law does allow you to defend yourself or the life of somebody else from receiving great bodily harm or death. But there is going to be an investigation that's going to take place. You're going to be interviewed. You may be detained for a while. Your weapon may be taken from you. But at the end, I'm confident that the process works out, and those people who did no wrong will see no ill effects from it.
Thank you for your call. We're going to go to Mike in Powder Springs right now. Mike, what is your question?
That's not necessarily a question, guys. I just kind of want to piggyback on the plan prepare share. I travel extensively working with companies and governments on active shooter training. I'm listening to the conversation. We're talking about the incident as it occurs. I think we could put a lot of our focus on the preventing it from occurring, and that's probably a lot better than having to go into violence with people who aren't necessarily trained. And what I would want business owners, business employees, and people who work in various facilities is to look at your facilities from a bad guy's eye. Every human being, whether you're going to do an act of violence, you're always going to tell somebody about it. What's happened is, as people, we live in a very safe society. If you look at the numbers, realistically, the odds, as you guys mentioned, it is typically small, and we have structured our society around that. So we don't recognize predatory behavior when it occurs around us. So when someone is exhibiting, points where they're looking to target someone, we may not recognize that. We may think, hey, that's kind of odd behavior, but then we'll let it pass. But realistically, if you have someone who's setting up observation points, or they're at a place for no reason, or they're going through stress and no one's actually talking about it, those are things that, as a business owner or as a building security personnel or even the maintenance staff, they're going to see people in oddball locations. And those are the people that I'd want to talk to and develop your team practices so that you can share that information. Every incident, regardless of whether it's a terrorist attack or whether someone's going to rob you of your wallet on the street, will always have pre-incident indicators. Those are the things that I would truly drill down on and work with your law enforcement partners and work with your security partners and ask them what those are, because every cop on the street knows exactly what predatory behavior looks like. We know it when we see it, and we can describe it in detail. That information is critical in preventing an active shooter situation.
Gentlemen, comment?
Sure, and I think to the caller's point, active shooters, they do exhibit behavior ahead of time. Again, as I mentioned earlier, they plan, they prepare, they share, and they act. So they do. There are three significant stages before the actual act of violence. And so we'd rather catch them those stages earlier, prevent the act of violence rather than prosecute it. And there are behaviors that are of concern, things that we all need to be on the lookout for, and they deserve further research or investigation if we see these, and whether it's a friend, coworker, subordinate, but development of personal grievances, many of these folks develop personal grievances, and that may be driving their behavior. Contextually, they may have experienced a significant perceived or real loss, whether it's loss of a job, financial loss, loss of a relationship in the months leading up. And there are other behaviors, too, that I encourage folks to go to our active shooter website on the FBI webpage and look at those other behaviors to see what they are.
You're listening to an active shooter roundtable here on News Radio 106.7. About 8 minutes left. We're going to take it till 9 o'clock for you. And we're still taking your calls, 844-404-1067, 844-404-1067. And we have Steve from Marietta on the line, and you have a question from a teacher's standpoint.
Well, my question, first of all, thanks for taking my call. From a school's perspective, you know, the schools and the college campuses and so forth, I'm wondering if it's, you know, if it would pay to have teachers be able to carry in their classrooms and then advertise it as such, you know, with stickers or decals on the doors from a, you know, someone's perspective of wanting to do some harm. If I saw that and knew that, I might think differently.
School is going to be under a burden to come up with a plan that works with the public safety's interest. And you know, there are different schools of thought on whether or not using signage to misdirect certain people that might be in the active shooter event, and it, you know, it bears some discussion. But that really is up to the school that can develop that into an action plan and train that with their entire staff. And I know that you know, my wife is in education and teaches high school. I know that the county that she works in, they've developed a plan, and whether it could be improved or not, that's the plan that is trained, and that's the plan that they're going to go with. And I think that's really what we're saying here, is that there's no perfect response to this event, but some plan is always going to be better than no plan at all.
So at 8:54, thank you so much for joining us with our active shooter roundtable here on News Radio 106.7.
Thanks to Training Coordinator, FBI Special Agent Andrew Van Epp. So many questions, and thank you for calling. Officer Dave Baldwin, Sergeant Dave Collins were both with us this morning from Marietta Police. Jonathan Crandall, Head of Training with Stoddard's Gun Range as well. Don't forget, you can catch this entire roundtable on our website, newsradio1067.com.
Coming up on 8:55, we have another check on traffic and weather on News Radio 106.7.